Well, Thursdays at Fort are always a little bittersweet, because let's be honest, most people are pretty tired. But also, it's the last day, so you're thinking of all the activities that you want to do, and you're already anticipating the frustrating line at the ice cream canteen tonight. So you might want to get in line right after this. But as we've been working through our week, we've been looking at Moses' Psalm 90. And going back to Sunday, we looked at the context that Moses was going to make these requests of God. He viewed first who God was from his own experience of both knowing him but also walking with him. And then he saw who we are, our frailty and our fallenness, in light of walking with the nation Israel through both the good times and the bad, both the times when they were obedient and the times when they failed. And then he came to verse 12 and started making these requests of God. And as I said, I think Moses did this near the end of his life. And as I've gotten older, I realize that he probably was able to make these requests because he had seen a lot of things in his life and realized how important these were. The other thing I said at the outset is, while they seem to be independent requests, I think they're actually interrelated, and I think he's building towards an end, which we're going to see today. So the first one was to teach us to number our days, teach us to bring a purpose to each day that we're living, see every day as a gift, but also live with the intention of creating a heart of wisdom, gaining a heart of wisdom, so that when we enter that last season of life particularly, we have something to give back to those who are coming behind. And then turn and have compassion. We need that, because if we're honest, we failed God in so many different ways. And then yesterday we looked at the idea of satisfying us in the morning and making us rejoice. Recognizing that from the outset, with the nation Israel and with the people that he has redeemed to be the church, a characteristic of them is to be thankful for what God has done. And recognizing, as D.C. Schindler has said, the givenness of things. The nation Israel was given that charge as Levites to do that every day. And what I suggested to you is that's a great habit for us to develop. But coupled with that, Moses said, give us as many good days as we have bad days. Because he recognizes when you live long enough, there are some challenging times that we go through. And so he's recognizing that even in the midst of that, we can find a way to rejoice, because that's not what defines us. Because if we know Christ and we're walking with God, we have a hope that goes beyond even the pain and suffering and the struggle that we're going through now. And today, we're going to look at this last verse, or this last request, show us favor and establish for us the work of our hands. So if you can turn back to Psalm 90, we're going to just read that verse together. It's the last verse in Psalm 90. So, and again, as I've tried to make as a habit, I'll just have someone else read it. Anyone willing to stand and read it, go ahead. You can stand in the back there and read. Just verse 17.
Let the favor of the Lord our God be upon us, and establish the work of our hands upon us. Yes, establish the work of our hands.
So Moses is asking God at the last minute for something very important. He says, let the favor of the Lord our God be upon us. Now, the reason why we didn't just jump to this request is because the context where we started was very important. Favor actually means live a life that delights or pleases the Lord. And the thing I want you to see is the contrast of that request against what he had observed about God at the beginning. What a contrast to what he said, that we are terrified in your presence because of our failures. So the last thing that he's saying to the nation Israel is, let us live a life that delights and pleases the Lord, because he had seen a group of people who hadn't done that. I think he's telling us that today too. Let us live a life to delight and please the Lord. What I also think is interesting is this is one of the last things he's requesting, because I think he got to the point where he realized, with everything that's going on, that's the focus. That's the end goal. That's how we should think about our life. We're not going to do it perfectly, but that's how we should do it intentionally. What's interesting is, as I said, these are independent requests, but I think he's summarizing for us here what the end goal should be as we do these other things. Now, the other thing he says is, establish for us the work of our hands. Now, we are not all promised the same things in life. Some of us will know much joy, others of us much sorrow. Some will be given fame and fortune, others nothing but obscurity and poverty. But the one thing we're all promised is that our life will end, and at some point we will stand before the judgment seat of Christ, as Todd talked about last night. There, before our Maker, we will give account of how we've used the days, words, relationships, dollars, skills, and opportunities that God has entrusted to us. And Moses is asking that we invest in things that have permanence and are not fleeting. What's also interesting about this is in that psalm, this is the only repeated phrase. And just like when I speak or anyone else speaks, when you say something more than once, you want to make sure that your audience doesn't miss it. So I don't think this is a mistake in the translation or something where Moses stuttered. I think he knew that in the end, it was so important that we live a life that delights and pleases the Lord, but that we invest what God has given us in things that are permanent and not things that are fleeting. Let our efforts contribute to something that outlasts us and is pleasing to God. If I were to summarize all five sessions that we have, it would be that phrase. Let us live a life and our efforts contribute to something that is permanent and is pleasing to God. And once again, if you go back and read where Moses started, it's quite a contrast to the idea that we are withering like grass. Because he recognizes that our time is short, but we've been given much by God. And so the question we have is, how are we going to invest that to do something? Now, it doesn't mean that we will live a life of perfection, but it does mean that we will live a life with intention. It's very easy to take these things and turn them into legalism and say, these are the things I have to do. Just like I said about reading the Proverbs. If you miss a day, don't beat yourself up. If it takes you 2 months, it takes 2 months. It's not about perfection. It's about intention. And that's the key. Now, one of the things I love about being at Ford is one of the best stories and examples I think we have of people who made a decision that helped establish something permanent is part of the history of Fort. It's in the book Fort Lore, which has been referenced. And I was going to tell the story, and I decided that I should just have one of the authors read the story. So where's Tom Robertson? Tom's going to come up, and he's going to read a story from Fort Lore about the people in the bottom picture there.
In 1956, my mom and dad, Sherman and Janice Robertson, right over there on the wall, were looking for a place to start a camp. We lived in Rhinelander, Wisconsin, where my dad was a pastor, but he dreamed of starting a camp. So he and my mom checked out properties all over the North Woods. The real estate agent finally brought my dad out to the Spider Lake property, 80 acres of pristine wooded wilderness. Dad walked the whole shoreline and loved everything about it. He came home filled with excitement because he had found this beautiful property around the lake. On the property, there was a house called the Hogan. We called it the Happy Hogan. Beautiful birch trees and a lake. It was also nestled next to the beautiful state forest. He returned to the real estate agent and said he wanted to buy it, but could only afford half of what the sellers were asking. Meanwhile, family friends, the Seaberts, from Indianapolis, came for a visit. Walking the property, they had a picnic and then a campfire, and Dad shared the dream of starting a Christian camp. The Seaberts were very interested in what he was doing. They left for a vacation, and on the way back, they stopped at our house and dropped off a check for $4,000 and said, "Go fund your dream." That $4,000 with inflation today would be worth about $35,000. Who would be dumb enough to give that to a pastor of all people and say, "Go find your dream"? But God was at work. Dad worked out a deal with the sellers, and they actually sold the property to my dad for $8,000, which was still a lot of money back in the day. We built two little cabins and an outhouse. We had to have an outhouse. In my 30 days to start a camp, we needed a bat, a ball, and a Bible, and maybe a horse or two. We had a few horses, Old Joe, which was an old swayback horse, and Bunk. We also had a mean-tempered horse named Killer, but we got rid of him.
Thank you, Tom. So think about this. We're standing in this amazing facility. We've enjoyed an amazing week on an amazing piece of property. But it started because Truman and Jan had a dream, and the Sieberts were willing to write a $4,000 check to a crazy pastor in Rhinelander, Wisconsin. Let us establish the work of our hands. I never met the Sieberts. I know that they never got to see the fullness of what they did. And we benefit from that today. One of the things that people have always remarked about is, if you know, we come from Indianapolis. We have a full week of people that drive from Indianapolis to Zionsville. So it's 546 miles to get here, right? And we've been doing that for years. But I don't know if you caught it. The people who started and wrote the first check were from Indianapolis. So it's almost like God ordained that this crazy church in Zionsville was going to keep coming all this way to be here because people in Indianapolis decided to write a check. Now, their story is about money, but it's not just about money. There's been lots of talent given to this place. There's been lots of introductions to relationships. So it's not just about if you have to write a check. I remember, and Tom, there was a person who did plastering, right? And when the gathering place was built, this guy was a professional and did huge churches and huge buildings. And he volunteered when the gathering place was being built to do all the plastering work that you see. This was done by a volunteer, but this is a guy who's done this stuff all over the world, if I remember correctly, right, Tom?
Well, all over the United States, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, it was like Leonardo da Vinci. I came in here when it was being built, and this guy was up on a scaffold just doing his work to make sure that it was beautiful. But he was investing in something for us to enjoy, even as we sit here. Now, before I move on, I need to tell you a little bit of the story about the book. I highly commend it. If you haven't read it, you should. But you all know Tom and Ron, and you love them. They are not the easiest people to write a book with. And I'll tell you why. So Tom Shaw, when he came on staff, said, we want to write a book. And I work in the publishing industry, so I kind of know it. So Tom calls me and says, you know, it'd be really great as we go into this campaign and stuff to finally get Ron and Tom to get their stories down. And I said, I'll help any way I can. I said, but here's what you need to do. If you really want to get this done, you need to pick a date when you want to hold the book in your hands. You build a production schedule behind that. And you probably need a writer to help them compile the stories. And I said, the only way to do that is get all those people in the room and plan that. And he said, okay. So I didn't hear from Tom Shaw for 6 weeks. And then he calls me. He says, okay, I'd like to organize a meeting. Would you be willing to come to Fort to be a part of that? And I said, sure, I'll work that out. So we came out. We met in the lowlands downstairs. And I've worked with a lot of authors over my life. And I've never worked with two authors like Ron and Tom before.
The best ever.
The best ever. I'll get there. So Tom Shaw has a connection with a guy who's a professional writer who can take the stories and craft them. So we sit downstairs, and it's Laura from marketing and Andrew from marketing and me and Tom Shaw. And in walk Tom and Ron. And they had the two scariest looking notebooks and binders I've ever seen. Just this collection of loose leaf scrap papers. I think there were expired coupons in there. There's probably an old Rhinelander penny saver. And I looked at the guy who had written a number of books, and I just saw his eyes get really big. It was like, what have I gotten myself into? So we started going through the scraps of paper, and we kind of built a production schedule. And we realized there was no way the book was going to get done, having them try and dictate the stories to this guy. So I don't know if you remember this, but a couple years ago, Ron and Tom did stories down at the campfire by the beach. We recorded every one of those and transcribed them. Because Ron and Tom have them in their head and in their heart, but that notebook was impossible. It was like the Da Vinci Code to get stories out of that. But transcribed it, put the book together. And the funniest thing, though, is I think the person who is most scared about the book is Ron. Is Ron here? No. Anyway, because if you know Ron, he never tells the same story the same way. And now it's in writing. And he has to stick to the story that he tells. But it's been a great joy for Tom and Ron. If you haven't read the book, I commend it to you. I've been coming around for it. There were stories that I didn't know. And one story that I didn't talk about but I think is relevant is I knew Truman a little bit when Becky and I first started coming. I never met Jan. And there's a story in that book about Jan that things were tough at a certain point. And Truman had an offer to go to Moody Church, I believe, right, Tom? To work, to be a pastor, to have a salary. And it was, you know, it was much more stable instead of this crazy dream of starting this camp. And Truman was deciding with four kids or five kids, you know, maybe I should do that. And Jan said something to the effect of, I don't think we should. I don't think God has started this for us not to finish it. That may be a paraphrase. But think about what that did for us sitting here today. At that moment when Truman could have cashed it in and gone to Chicago, Jan said, I don't think that what God started, he wouldn't want us to finish. That's why, even with her, it's let us see the work of our hands be established. And we have great examples of that. Now, there are others who have seen that as well, too. C.T. Studd was a missionary in China. He was an Englishman, and he's written a number of different things. China was a difficult place, but he wrote this poem on one of his trips to China on a ship as he was thinking about what he was going to do with his life. And the title of the poem is Only One Life. There's a number of verses in it, but I thought some of these were relevant to this request that Moses is making to let us establish the work of our hands. He says, only one life, yes, only one. Soon will be its fleeting hours be done. Then in that day, my Lord to meet and stand before his judgment seat. Only one life, 'twill soon be past. Only what's done for Christ will last. Only one life, a few brief years, each with its burdens, hopes, and fears. Each with its clays I must fulfill, living for self or in his will. Only one life, 'twill soon be past. Only what's done for Christ will last. Give me, Father, a purpose deep, in joy or sorrow, thy word to keep. Faithful and true to whate'er the strife, pleasing thee in my daily life. Only one life, 'twill soon be past. Only what's done for Christ will last. We all are given the same amount of time. We all are given each day the same amount of time. It's not a question of whether we get it, it's what we do with it and what we invest it in and what we're working towards. And Moses, for me, has been a bellwether to watch as I saw what he worked through in his life and what he asked for at the end of his life. This is one of the reasons why Tom referenced yesterday the legacy program that Fort has engaged in with believers. This isn't a program just to help Fort. This is a program to help all the body of Christ think wisely about the stewardship of what they've been given. One of the great things that's happened along with Tom, with Todd becoming the director, is Tom being able to lead that program. And it's been able to help lots and lots of people think through how to wisely be a steward to establish the work of their hands even after they're gone. So if you haven't thought about it, I really would encourage you to do that, because I don't think it's just about Fort. I think it's the responsibility of all of us to think in this way, no matter what our age. Because as Moses is helping us see, we need to be thinking about the end no matter how old we are. We need to think about how we're going to finish no matter how old we are. And I said this before and I say it again. The younger people sitting here, you got a huge advantage. You got a head start The bad news is now you're accountable because you've heard this. But you have a huge head start, and I'm convinced there's no better way to live. I was talking last night to someone about these messages, and I said, you know, I understand why older people get convinced in their ways. I said, for Becky and I, these kinds of ideas were things that we were sort of becoming aware of in our 20s and early 30s, and we thought, you know, I think this is right, so we're going to intentionally go this way. Well, now at my age and what I've seen, I'm convinced. I'm convinced that Moses has helped us see the things we should make decisions in our life, the way we should order and structure our life. Because not only does it bless us, but it blesses others. And it allows us to end our life in a way that is pleasing and delightful to the Lord and establish the work of our hands. And we don't end with a sigh. We end with a exclamation point. Now, why did Moses say this? He tucked the reason right in the middle of verse 10. And that's because he recognized that even in the best of our days, there are struggle and sorrow, and indeed they pass quickly and we fly away. Now some of you may recognize those last few words because the hymn writer used them to compose a song for us to sing titled "All Fly Away." So as we close our session today and for the week, I thought it would be an appropriate reminder as to why the requests of Moses are words we should take to heart and to begin to apply to our life. So I've asked the musicians to come for one last final time, and they're going to lead us in this song.